Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
There's a cat over here, there's a cat over there, and the wrong one died, and the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the Catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today I have a very special bonus episode. I had the privilege of seeing Cats the movie a few days before it actually was released for a special press screening. And because, as you know, this podcast is incredibly important to the success of the movie, I wanted to make sure I reviewed it for you. And speaking of the success of this movie, I want to ask who at Universal decided it would be a good idea to have opening weekend the same weekend as Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. I'm guessing whoever made that decision is likely the same person who decided Grisabella was the right choice to die. Either way, I want to talk about the movie, and I want to do it without any spoilers. And to do that, I want to bring in a special guest. I had the pleasure of seeing this movie with podcast extraordinaire and the host of the theater podcast, Alan Seals. So welcome, Alan.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad that you were able to come experience this movie with me.
And an experience it
experience it was. I highly recommend checking out Alan's podcast, also part of the Broadway Podcast Network. And we want to get into the movie. So, Alan, I want to tell you a quick story going in before I review this movie, because I have a little bit of history reviewing movies. Back in college, I actually wrote a few movie reviews for the college paper. And the reason I did this is because freshman year, someone told me, hey, you can get free movie tickets and then $10 if you write a few hundred words.
And that $10 was a lot in college.
It was a lot. It was exactly. It was great. And so I said, that sounds amazing. Let me do that. So you have to go write some fake movie reviews for movies that have been out for a long time. And so I did those and kind of made it up and had a good time. And then I got asked to tackle my first real movie in theaters. And do you have a guess of what that movie was?
Ghostbusters.
I wish. No, I'm not that old. Instead, it was the cinematic masterpiece, I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Adam Sandler and Kevin James.
Which I have to admit, I never saw because I could tell from the preview it was not something for me.
Well, I'm glad you said that. So I went to the theater, I watched this movie, and then I gave it a grade. And what do you think I graded it on a school grading scale? So
judging,
A through F.
Okay, A through F. Judging by the fact of that it wasn't very good, I would say probably a C-.
C-. That was probably what most people would have. It has a 14% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Mm.
And I gave it an A-.
I think your scale is off, man.
So the reason I'm telling you this is because I want to emphasize that when I go see movies, I'm a pretty easy grader. I don't go in with a lot of expectations. I just want to be amused, and I feel like I'm a fairly easily amused person. And so I feel like that's important for this context because the Cats movie was a cinematic experience. And I'm not sure if I would call it a good cinematic experience, but it was an experience. So we're going to get to grades at the end. We're not going to do A through F. We're going to do 1 through 9 Cat Lives because this is The Wrong Cat Died. But there are going to be plenty of actual reviews. So instead of doing a typical review, and I don't want to do spoilers, even though there's no spoilers. This movie's, the musical's been out for 40 years. But
you know Grisabella dies at
the end. Yeah, she dies at the end. Although we'll get to the ending. Interesting choice of the ending. But instead what I want to do is I want to go through things you liked and you disliked about the movie. And so I know there's probably more dislikes than likes, but I feel like we can scratch through this and go back and forth with a few things to give the viewers a little bit of an idea of what they're going to see, what they can expect, and not necessarily go in and change their mind going in. Because I want people to still go see this movie. I think it is worth seeing in a weird way.
Everyone is going to pull something different out of it, whether they go see it for the nostalgia or they go see it because it's like Paul McCartney. They've never heard of this person before.
Exactly.
They're like, oh, a new movie musical. I like those. So I think, yes, I agree with you, Mike. Everybody needs to go see this.
I'm going to kick off with a dislike just because there's going to be more than the likes. So I'm going to kick off with a dislike, and I'm going to give credit to Christopher Gurr, who said this in the bonus episode, but I did not like the dialogue.
I agree. I agree that it took me out of the flow of the musical.
It really was clearly centered around explaining the plot to someone who hadn't seen the movie before, because they talk about it being a competition and everyone's telling their stories. And these are all things that I had to surmise the first time I saw it. And now they're given this free reign of, hey, this is the public's too dumb to figure this out. So we're going to tell them exactly what they're watching. And I thought it was unnecessary.
I agree. Tom Hooper has experience. I mean, he did the Les Mis movie a couple of years
back. But they didn't have dialogue in
it. Right. Well, Les Mis itself is an opera, right? There's no dialogue in the whole thing. And it works, and they didn't add dialogue. But the opera itself, the music itself, tells the full story. Whereas here, that obvious plot, I guess hitting you over the head with what the plot is, was missing. So they decided to add it in.
Which is fair. And that kind of gets me to the part, my first like, which is I liked Victoria as a narrator.
Me too.
I enjoyed seeing it. I thought it was a very clever and smart way to allow the audience to kind of understand what's going on and view this chaos the same way she was at the same time. So a lot of the reactions that, especially if you haven't seen the musical, a lot of the reactions she was having are things that I had the first time I saw it in the theater.
And Francesca Hayward, this is her big introduction into film. She's a ballet dancer in English ballerina in the Royal Ballet in London. And obviously the right choice for a perfect dancer, which takes me to my first like, is that she was not the best singer, which I liked. And I say that I like that because it was obviously a stylistic choice. Tom Hooper, if for Les Mis as well, he had everyone singing live. They weren't singing, they weren't mouthing to tracks, right?
Interesting.
And
okay.
So I didn't research this yet. So I believe he probably did the same thing here with Cats, because you hear the breathing,
yeah,
and you hear the foot stomps on the wood like when they're outside or when they're inside in the rooms. You hear their feet hitting the ground. You hear them breathing. You hear them jumping when they're singing, like. You go to Broadway shows and you hear them like they're grunting around while they're moving, while they're singing, because that's real and that's live. And he brought that into this movie, which I really, really liked.
So that was something I agree with. I loved the dancing, like just the fact that they integrated this. I mean, a big part of seeing Cats in musical is the dance numbers, and they integrated. But it also led to one of my biggest dislikes, which was the cutting of the movie.
The jump cuts.
The jump cuts were out of control. Every other few seconds, I was cut out from watching someone do this incredible dance to a different version or a different angle of it, and it was a little nauseating.
That's something that I got annoyed with. I think Glee did a lot of that. In these big dance choral numbers, I'm like, just give me the wide shot. I just want to watch the wide shot.
Yeah.
That's me coming from a theater background where I want to look at everybody on stage. But I totally agree with you that I was like, oh, yeah, dancing, good. Oh, crap, they jump cut. Although now they're in a completely different location singing 2 seconds after where they just were.
Yeah.
So obviously reality isn't real here.
Yeah, it was, it really didn't. It just made it hard to watch. And when you had the talent, the level of talent they had with dancers.
Oh, my gosh.
It underutilized them.
They had the late twins.
The late twins.
Yeah.
Which I saw one, like, really good time when they were utilized, and the rest, they were kind of in the background.
Yeah. Oh, that was kind of one of my dislikes a little bit, is the underutilization, speaking of which, of the principals. Like, you've got James Corden and Taylor Swift and these other major, major, probably very expensive to have in the movie people.
Yes.
And we saw more of everybody else. I mean, I guess when OD came in, Dame Judi Dench came in, and we saw probably the most of her out of all the principals. But
well, Idris Elba is he was in it a lot more than I was expecting, because in the musical, Macavity's, you know, he's not there, and he was everywhere in this movie. He was a very center point. I mean, they made him the antagonist and really hammered that home.
I was a fan of I'm trying not to give away a spoiler. I was a fan of how he entered and exited until it was overused.
So I had that as a dislike. But it also led me to one of my favorite likes, which was the crowd. Because I'm assuming most everyone who's going to be in this theater is not all going for the same reasons. And our crowd definitely had some people that either were in an altered state of mind or were there for the comedic value of it when there's not – like the unintentional comedic value of it. Mm-hmm. And so at that particular time, every time he entered and exited, some guy about two rows behind us just started cackling. And that to me made this experience 10 times better, because the guy behind us and there's a guy right in front of us that were laughing at the most serious moments, I loved. I absolutely loved. I think it made the experience so much better, because – it did take a little bit of this, like, this is weird, and it's 2019 weird. You know, it's like not the 70s when it came out, where it was thought provoking and new and different. It's just kind of weird.
You know what? Speaking of weird, did you ever see Team America from South Park?
One of my favorite movies.
Right. So when they were creating the puppet, the marionettes for South Park, they actually had the face look too realistic at first. They had too many servos in the face. And so they took some out so it would look more, I guess, less like a real person, less like a real talking, because it was more believable by the audience to see a marionette talking than a marionette that looks like a real person talking, mm-hmm. right? And so that gets me here again to one of my likes that then turned into a dislike, was I love the technology that goes into this, because I don't know how they did. I mean, I assume it's some sort of like facial motion capture, obviously whole body motion capture, but like Avatar James Cameron, he pushed the envelope and had the avatars, developed a new facial to animation technology for Avatar. So I feel like something like this, like that went into this with the whole body capture, which I was like, oh, this is really cool how they're making these real people into cats. But then I was like, whoa, they are too sexy for me. Yeah. Like, I was seriously attracted to White Cat, and I'm like, this is weird.
It was uncomfortable.
It was uncomfortably weird, and I don't know if it was just unfinished, because, you know, you read the article, Tom Hooper said that they finished the final cut of the movie, like, what, a couple hours before the first premiere, yeah. Like, you could see they had full-on human feet, full-on human hands.
Full-on human noses.
Full-on human noses. And mouths and eyes, I guess, for that matter, too. I guess, yeah, Macavity's had, like, contacts in. But still, it was, like, it was too much human for me to believe that they were cats. And it was a little bit strange.
It got a lot of press leading up to the movie because of it reminded everyone of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Mm.
About how the whole crowd had an uproar. And that's what happened during the trailers. The crowd got in an uproar about the CGI and just the fake fur and what was happening, and it was a little distracting in the movie.
Well, they had probably somebody, I want to watch the credits, they probably had somebody or a whole team of people that were just looking at or responsible for the tails, you know, the tailography.
Yeah, it's like the dinosaur supervisor in Jurassic Park.
Yeah, yeah, the tailography, because the tails had, and the ears too, ears had to correspond, and the tails had to correspond to choreography, to singing, to emotions, and obviously, they're not going to have that in real life while they're going around dancing and singing. So that's got to be added in post.
Yeah, it's a lot. Let me go to a couple other. I want to do a couple other really quick ones before we cut to some awards we have at the end. The ones I want to talk about is a couple of the characters that they made some changes to, or they just adjusted more than I was expecting. So I thought some were really well done and some were a disaster. The one that I thought was really well done was Taylor Swift. She sings the entire Macavity song by herself. The whole catnip being in there, I just thought that whole scene was really clever. And it's a great song. It's a fun song. And I thought they did a really good job with it. But to your point, I think they paid a lot of money for her to be on screen for about 7 minutes.
Yeah, I totally agree. Somebody like Jennifer Hudson, who keeps recurring, she keeps coming back. You know, Grisabella keeps coming in and out of the scenes. Like, okay, cool. Pay some money for that. For her, she's worth it. She sings the crap out of that song at the end.
Very much.
And yeah, Tay-Tay, I mean, she brought it. She wrote the end credit song, which was cool. Which she didn't sing, but she wrote it. So it's an original song for the movie that didn't actually go in the movie. It's a credit song. But yeah, could have cut that. Like, I think Ian McKellen, too, as Gus, I think that was probably not needed.
I think a lot of them were not needed.
He did a great job.
But are you seeing this movie if they don't have all the stars?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Because me, personally, I want to go see this.
I think
this musical.
You have a podcast called The Theater Podcast. So that doesn't surprise me. But I think the majority of people are choosing between this the opening weekend between Star Wars, Little Woman with Emma Watson, and this. They had to have some names.
Oh, that's true. I guess who is the lead in Les Mis? Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe.
Who's one of the worst singers I've ever heard.
And the lead female was Anne Hathaway. So they had some names too.
Right. And can at least sing. And Hugh Jackman can at least sing. Hugh has a theater background, of course.
For sure.
He's doing Music Man in 2020. And yeah, Russell Crowe I thought was a weird choice. So Tom, if you're listening.
Yeah, you need some names.
What's going on, man?
So the other one that was lightly bothered me, not as much as the rest, but they kind of changed Mungo Jerry and Rebel Teaser song. It was not like the original. And it was a fun song because it's just always a fun, quick interlude. But I didn't like the way that they did it. I just wasn't a fan of the change. But the one I want to get to, and the last one I get to before we talk briefly about the ending, because I don't want to spoil the ending, but the ending was an odd choice, is I want to talk about what they did to the magical Mr. Mephistopheles.
He was magical in the literal sense of the word.
They destroyed one of the best characters of the entire musical by making him awkward and weird. And he's got a little awkward love story with Victoria that they kind of allude to a couple times. And I just, everything about it was wrong. And he is like, there's going to be purists who are going to watch the normal magical Mr. Mephistopheles on stage and wonder what this decision was.
Well, I mean, you've talked about this so many times, even with all the guests, that there's so many like gay undertones and even bisexual or whatever it is. And he was just like, which brings me to my point of this, or which brings me to another point, is that in this entire movie, there were no homosexual relationships at all. I mean, there was lots of like cat cuddling and they rub heads together like cats do, but there was, like you said, in whatever limited love stories that there were, it was all heterosexual.
They cut out a lot of his like cool parts. Like there was no, I mean, he conjured Old Deuteronomy, which that's like, you know, a material part of the story. So it's like that was needed to be there. But even that, they made it a really weird way of doing it, and it made him look super awkward and not magical. And I was not a fan. I think one of the best characters in the entire musical that they made into this unnecessarily like quirky, weird friend.
Yeah. Yeah, he became more of a sidekick than like a showman.
Yeah. Not a fan. Now, I want to talk quickly about the ending, and then we're going to go to our categories. I don't want to spoil the ending, but I just want to say, until I got to the ending, I was almost ready to say, you know what? I could buy this. I could buy this movie. Like, I could get this whole thing. Like, there are some interesting choices. It's an experience. There's definitely things I didn't like. But I was impressed with what they had to work with and how they put it together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could get over all the rest of the stuff. And then the ending came. And I remember very vividly, because you and I both looked at each other in the theater and with this kind of WTF moment.
There was a whole reaction across
the whole crowd,
the whole audience.
And it's only the second time I've ever had this reaction in a theater. The first time being when I saw Lord of the Rings, the third part, where that movie also ignored the logical ending point and went for like 45 more minutes. And this was the second time where this musical ends with Grisabella ascending to the Heaviside Lair. But this movie did not end there. And I kind of want to just leave it at that. Because if you're not going to see the movie, then I'm happy to tell you what you experience at the end. But if you're going to see the movie, I don't want to ruin it for you. Because it's such a odd and, in my opinion, wrong. But wrong in a way that I didn't even mark this as a dislike. Because it was so much of a dislike that became a little bit of a like. Because the experience got so much funnier for me. And I just kept thinking about who, like, this, the only thing I think of is this was the 36th hour that Tom Hooper was saying he was cutting. And he's just like, let's just keep it. Let's keep it in. We got to go put this on the, you know, show to the premiere tonight. It's in an hour. Let's just keep the ending versus just ending with Grisabella ascending.
It took me so out of the moment because it was just so like 180 of what we had just been watching for the previous 90 minutes, you know? And yeah, I agree. It didn't fit. It was not the natural ending. And then there was actually even another part where I was like, okay, now this is the ending. And then it kept going again.
Yeah. It is. There are three distinct times in that ending where you think it should, and it cuts back to the awkward part. And it happens three full times.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good 10 minutes more,
At
least.
Maybe, probably was like two, but it just felt like 10.
It felt like another hour.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't want to spoil it because I really do think like when you go see this movie, you're going to have the same moment. It's going to be the most memorable thing you see.
Memorable.
And that includes more memorable than memory. So I want to leave us at that, and I want to go to do some categories, some categories. Before I do that, I want to take a quick break and acknowledge my sponsors, because we've made it through this entire season. We haven't had the ad breaks that I've wanted, and so I want to read a few ads from a few people that have companies that have sponsored me. I'm legally obligated to tell you that none of these companies have actually sponsored the podcast. And one of these companies might not be real, but I want to read some ads for you. So first up is Amazon Prime. Have you read T.S. Eliot's poems? Have you seen the 1998 Cats musical on DVD? Do you need to watch the new Cats movie, which will definitely be heading to DVD very fast? You can do all these things on Amazon Prime. Plus, coming soon, The Marvelous Mrs. Mistopheles. Sign up today to watch. Catstrology.com, your one-stop shop for your cat's astrology sign. Have you ever wondered why your cat is a little bit of a dick? Is it because you named him McCavity or because he's a Taurus? We have the answer. Visit us online at knowyourcat.com or catstrology.com and learn all about them. Buy in the next 24 hours and we'll throw in a breakdown of the moon that Grisabella pretends to fly to at the end of the show. And last but not least, the Broadway Podcast Network. For some reason, the Broadway Podcast Network gave me a microphone and asked me to talk about Cats the musical. No one, myself included, thought this would be a good idea, but here I am clawing my way to the top of the podcasting world. I'm currently the number one ranked parody podcast about Cats the musical for listeners in the state of Indiana. If Cats isn't for you, you probably shouldn't be listening to me at this point. If Cats isn't for you, you probably shouldn't be listening to me anyways, but you should check out some of the other amazing Broadway Podcast Network podcasts. The Broadway Podcast Network has incredible shows like Cary Butler's Breaking Broadway, You Can't Say That with Tanya Pinkins, A Broadway with Brittany Bigelow, The Theater Podcast with Alan Seals, our special guest today, Broadwasted, The Fabulous Invalid, Josh Swallows Broadway, and many more. Find out more at BroadwayPodcastNetwork.com. And welcome back. It's now time for our award categories. So, Alan, I've got a few awards I want to give, and we'll have some nominations, and you can tell me who you think wins. The first one I want to nominate is I treated a multi-million dollar movie project like a junior high school science project award. And the nominees are Tom Hooper. Who do you think the winner is?
Oh, this is a tough choice. I think I'm going to have to go with Tom Hooper.
I agree. And congratulations, Tom Hooper, for admitting that you stayed up 36 hours straight to finish the movie hours before the premiere, just like every kid finishes their science project in junior high. I can't believe you finished a $95 million budgeted movie hours before the premiere. I'm like, I'm proud. I'm actually very proud because that's incredible.
That gives me... That actually helps me with my imposter syndrome, because if someone is willing to give somebody $95 million who procrastinates in the same way that I do, then I'm in good company. Or they're in good company, either way.
Yeah, it's kudos. Kudos to you, Tom. Okay, the next award is for the Let Me Show You How Small These Cats Actually Are award, and that's for the best unnecessary set piece to try to scale the cats. So the nominees are... There's a 20-foot door that pops up a couple times. There's an entire scene with Jenny Anydots where she is in her home, and it's a kitchen. And so there's a ton of kitchen props. And then the last nominee is the Mungo Jerry and Ripple teaser scene where they break into a house. So they start in a bedroom and go into a dining room and wreak havoc on this entire home.
I will have to go with Rumple and Mungo because Victoria's with them and comes out with... a ring she's wearing as a bracelet, a human ring that she's wearing as a cat bracelet.
That's a good one. The reason that they were the winner for me is because when they get to the dining room table, they sit on the chair and they hold a fork and knife that's bigger than they are. And that was the one where I was just like, all right, we get it. They're tiny. Let's move on. I was still at that point. I was also still angry because that wasn't the song that I was wanting to hear.
Right.
Congratulations, Mungo and Rumpelteazer, for winning this award. The third award goes for what I am calling the Luke P. Bachelor Edit, which is the award for, if you don't get that reference, that's for the character that got the worst edit in the movie. And so the nominees for this are the straight and nerdy Mr. Mistopheles, Skimbleshanks being a tap dancer, Jenny Anydots being her comedic lazy, or McCavity, who kind of got a extra edit with the way he goes in and out of all the scenes.
I think my top choice is Jenny Anydots, simply because there were too many gratuitous comedic slapstick moments where she just tried to jump and was fat and hit a wall and fell. Like that, just do it once, okay. Five times, I'm good.
And a lot of cat puns. Like and a lot cat of, got your tongue.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that was too meta for me. Yeah. She should not know cat puns.
I still think the worst edit goes to Mr. Mistopheles, which we covered earlier, so I don't want to get back into it. It's still, you know, I'm 24 hours later, and I'm still mad about it. It's besides the ending, it's the part that bothered me most about this whole movie. And so that would be my Luke P. Bachelor Edit Award. And the last award we have to give is the, wow, that person saw something different than I did award. And I'm going to give that to the person who enjoyed the movie the most. And so this is going to be groups of people. So my nominees are going to be, do you think diehard Cats fans, overall Broadway enthusiasts, or people who attend this movie with no knowledge but at an altered state of mind?
Ooh, this is a tough one. I seriously think that it's going to be theater, Broadway nerds. Not nerds in a good way. Lovers of Andrew Lloyd Webber, lovers of this show, who are going to come, and no matter who sings it or where it's performed, they love the music. It brings back some nostalgia. It brings back memories and just makes them feel overall good. So I'm going to go with Cats lovers and enthusiasts.
I think they are going to enjoy it. And I think anybody who has seen the musical ever, you kind of got the WTF moments out of the way in the theater. And so I think those people are all going to like it, but have some criticisms, especially the last 2 to 25 minutes. I do think someone who comes in an altered state of mind are going to really love this, because there were a couple people in our theater that were laughing at all these points that should not have had people laughing. And the whole time I kept thinking, I wish I was as happy as those people in this movie. And so that makes me think that they likely made a decision that they're going to be very happy with when they debrief about this movie with their friends later. So the final question, which is, how would you rate this movie on a scale of 1 to 9 cat lives?
You're asking me?
I'm asking you. You're going to rate first.
Oh, goodness.
I graded Chuck and Larry an A-, so we all know where I'm going.
So what is the equivalent of an A- in Cat Lives? Like an
It'd
8?
Be like an 8, 8 and a
okay.
half.
Okay. So I... It for me, it gets major points for the technology, and I liked the orchestrations, and the cast was good. Even though underutilized, the cast was good. So I'd give this maybe 4.5 cats.
Wow. Generous. I'm giving it 3 cats. I'm giving it 3 cats because it's 1 cat for each time the ending cut back to this awkward moment that made me unsure of what I was watching for the last few minutes. And I feel like that's the only way to grade it, is to grade it off of that ending and give it 3 cats based off of the 3 cutbacks to that particular moment. Well, thank you, Alan, for joining, and for listeners for enjoying this special bonus of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I highly recommend going to see the Cats movie, which is in theaters everywhere on Friday, December 20th, 2019. Bring your friends, family, but don't bring your children, even though this is PG. I've said that many times, and I want to stick to that. Please do not bring your children. It will haunt their nightmares. But, Alan, thank you. And how can we catch your podcast?
You can find me on the Broadway Podcast Network at bpn.fm/TTP.
If you had strong opinions about the movie, I would love to hear from you. Whether you loved it, thought it was the best movie ever made, whether you thought it was the worst thing you've ever seen in your life, or anything in between, I'd love to hear about that. I'd love to hear about your thoughts on the ending. Please let me know your thoughts. Either send me a direct message on Instagram at TheWrongCatDied or email me at TheWrongCatDied@gmail.com. Love to hear your thoughts, your takes on the movie. And if you have a very groundbreaking or good hot take, you'll have a chance to hopefully be on a future bonus episode where maybe we will be discussing this movie in further detail with former cast members and hopefully maybe some movie cast members, if you know any. And if you are posting any of your reactions, don't forget to tag me at The Wrong Cat Died on Instagram, and I will share them and post some of my favorites to the followers. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, TheWrongCatDied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah,
not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.